We're holding on Lamed Dalet Omud Beis, about the middle of the Omud, Omud Avona. We looked in the Mishnah. You have the case where the Shomer has a claim that would make him potter from paying for the object that was for the Pekodin that was deposited by him. And we said if instead he doesn't do that, if instead he goes and pays, then he's entitled to the kefil of the Tashlom Abba Chamisha that may come as a result of it. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Huna, Mashbiin Oisei Shvur Sheina Birshusai." Actually, when the guy is saying that, Rashi explains, we're talking about even when he's paying that this din is going to apply. There are Rishonim who explain that it means that no, not necessarily when he's going to pay, then he pays and that's that. But there are Rishonim who explain rather that the following din that we're going to learn would only be when he's going to swear. Anyway, Rav Huna says, "Mashbiyin oisei shvur sheina birshusai." We make him take a shvur that the object is not still in his possession. My time, achashin shema ein of nosan ba, because otherwise we're concerned that he may have put his eyes on it. In other words, he may think to himself, "You know what? So here I have this thing as a pikodin by me, which is rare, and I can't easily get something like it someplace else. So therefore, I'll keep it for myself, and I'll claim that it was stolen. And fine, I'm going to be paying him. I'm not a ganav." But he'll rationalize to himself like that, that he'll take it and then and pay for it rather than returning it the way he's supposed to. Therefore, we make him take a shvur that it's actually not in his possession. The Rambam actually learns, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if we're talking about something which is easily, you can easily get one like it in the marketplace, there are lots of others like it, and they're easy to get, then we don't make him take this kind of shvur, because then why would he do that? If let's say the Pikodin was, let's say, a roll of cloth, and there are many rolls of cloth like that easily available in the marketplace, then you'd have no reason to do that. The shomer would have no reason to do that in order to keep it. He would just go and buy one for himself if that's what he wanted. He's paying the same amount anyhow. Only when we're talking about an animal or something that you can't easily find something like it, so then that's when we're talking about he'd have to swear. Okay, so the Gemara says Mesvi. The Gemara says I have a contradiction to Rav Huna. A Mishnah says in Shavuos, Hamalves chaver al mashkin. If a person lent money to somebody else with a mashkin, v'ovid hamashkin, and the mashkin later on got lost or damaged or whatever, to the point where now what we have to do is we have to offset the amount of the mashkin from the amount of the loan. Rashi points out that we have to be talking about there's a discussion in other places in Shas whether when a person lends on a mashkin, is he considered, we're going to have it later in Or Masecht actually, whether when a person lends on a mashkin, is he considered a shoma chinam or a shoma sachar? If we say that he's a shoma chinam, then no, he actually wouldn't, then we wouldn't deduct anything from the debt because of the loss of the mashkin, because after all, he's shoma chinam, he's potter, so he'd swear that the mashkin was lost or destroyed or whatever, and that would be that. Only if we hold that he's a shomer socher, that would be when this din would be relevant, because as a shomer socher, he needs to pay for it. And now what we'd be saying is we deduct that from the court, we deduct the amount of that from the debt, from the loan. So you have a few different cases. But Omaloi, the first case is where the Malva says, Sela he was silcha olav, the shekel hayashava. He says, I lent you a Sela, with this thing as the mashkin, and it was worth a shekel, which is half of a sela. So one shekel, half a sela, is lost to me now because of the loss of the mashkin, but you still owe me the other half of the sela. The loiva says loiki, no, it's not so. Ela sela he'll be sani olav. You lent me a sela with this mashkin, the sela hayashava, and the mashkin itself was worth a sela as well. So therefore, in other words, it offsets what I owe you is cancelled out by what you owe me. Potter. So now the loiva is potter from swearing a regular shvur because he's kofar hakol, and as we've learned before, kofar hakol doesn't swear in a totem. But Dirabanan, he's going to have to swear. Shvuos Hesis, but our Mishnah is not talking about that because Shvuos Hesis was only the takana of that, came about only in the times of the Gemara. Second case, the Mishnah says, is Sela hu v'sicha ol v'shekel ha'yashava. The Malva makes the same claim as before. I lent you a Sela, the mashkin was worth a shekel, therefore you still owe me one shekel, half a Sela. V'haloim, the loiva says, loiki, it wasn't so. Ela Sela hu v'sani ol v'shloisha dinar in ha'yashava. Yes, you lent me a Sela. The mashkin was worth not a Sela, not a shekel, like you're saying, and not a seller, like in the first case, but rather it was worth 3 dinarim. There were 4 dinarim to the seller. So in other words, he's saying that. That you lent me 100, and so here you have the malva. Let's put it in modern terms. Then the malva is saying that I lent you 100. The mashkin was worth 50. Therefore, you owe me the other 50. The loiva is saying that no, the loan was 100. The mashkin was worth 75. Therefore, I owe you only 25. Well, then it's a one dinner out of four, because a seller consists of 4 dinner. Well, now he's a moedim mitzas chayev. So now he has to swear as any other moedim mitzas were. The next case is the other way around. Seller who is sonu alof shnayim hayishaver. The malva says here it's the other way around. In the third and fourth cases, it's going to be the loiva who's making the claim. The loiva says, you lent me a seller with the smashgun, but the mashgun was worth 2 sloyim. So therefore, first of all, as far as my debt to you, that's gone. But not only that, you owe me another seller because, again, you're a shomer sacher, and you would have had to pay me 2 sloyim. Meanwhile, I would have had to pay you 1 seller. So 1 seller is canceled out, but the other one you still owe me. And the malva says no. He says, I lent you a seller and the mashkin was worth a seller. Potter. So again, he's potter from a shvuas hatora because again, he's a kofer hakol. Here, the loiva is saying you owe me a seller, and the malva is saying I don't owe you anything. And there we have the concept of kofer hakol. So he's potter. And the fourth case, seller who be sonny olav shnayim hayishava, where again the malva says you lent me a seller on this mashkin and it was worth 2. V'halo omer, and the loiva and the malva answers back loiki. So the malva in this case counterclaims and says that the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, which would be 1 seller plus 1 dinar. So he's claiming I owe you 1 dinar, but no more than that. Not like you're claiming that I owe you 4 dinarim, which is 1 entire seller. So chayev. So again, he's going to be chayev as a moedim mitzvah. And the Mishnah finishes off, and here's the key point that we're going to use as a contradiction against Rav Huna. The Mishnah finishes off, mi nishba, who is it that swears? Misha pikadin etzlei, the one by whom the pikadin is. So in a case of a loiva and a malva, then the pikadin would be located by the malva. Here we're talking about a mashkin for a debt. So therefore, the malva is the one by whom the pikadin is found. And the reason why you do that, shema yishavazeh, otherwise the loiva might swear how much it was worth, the yotzi alois hapikodin, and then the loiva. So the loiva might swear how much it was worth, and then the malva is going to take out the pikodin and show that it's not like the loiva says. So Rashi says the result is he would passel him as an aid, because then it means that he would demonstrate in Beis Din that the guy is a liar. Where he said that the mashkin is worth X amount, and now I have it. I can bring it out and show that it's worth less than that, and therefore that the loiva is a liar and passel him for aedus in the future. So therefore, we're saying that instead the malva himself should be the one to swear to the value of it, and then obviously if it's worth something different, then he's not going to take it out and passel himself. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos. Point Rabbi Natan points out in Tosfos. I mean, that's all. First of all, that's all the more reason, that the loiva should be the one to swear. He doesn't want to become posel laedus in the future, so he's going to be very sure that whatever he's claiming is exactly so, precisely because the malva could take it out and show that he's not lying. So we don't do a tekona l'ramai. We don't do something in order to fix up things for a potential cheater. And Tosfos says, what about you might have, for example, the mashkin might go down in value. So therefore, he was swearing that it was worth a certain amount and now it's worth less. But based on the continuation of the Gemara, it doesn't really work out. So Rabbeinu Tam likes Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, which is that the Shema Yishava Zeva Yotzi Alos Kodin just means that it's going to come out if the Malveh is able to take out the Kodin. And we can see for ourselves, based and can see for themselves, how much it's actually worth without having required a shvur in the first place, then it comes out basically that there was a shvur for nothing, and it's a gnai to do that, where you could so easily figure out what the thing is worth, then we would rather do that rather than have people taking a shvur. So now So first we have to establish which of the four cases in the Braisa is this last part about mi yishava, about mi nishba, mi shapukad netzlei, which of the four cases does it refer to? And then we're going to see how on the face of it, it makes a question on Rav Hun. So first the Gemara says, Aheya, on which part of the Mishnah is that last part talking about that the malva should be the malva who's holding on to the mashkin should be the one to swear? Ilema asefa, are you going to say that it refers to the fourth case where we're saying that ordinarily so what are we saying over there? There is obviously it can't be referring to the first and third cases because there's no shvua over there. So it's either the second or the fourth case. So if we assume that it's referring to the fourth case, we just finished discussing the fourth case, and then the Mishnah says, by the way, it's the malva who swears. Well, you don't need that. But typically, the shvur gam malva. After all, anyway, even without any special takana to that effect, the malva is going to be the one swearing. Darka moidi mitzas ataina, because he's the one who's moidi mitzas. He's the one who's saying that the pekodin was worth 5 dinarim when the other guy is claiming that it was worth 8 dinarim, 2 slayim, and therefore he's moidi mitzas on 1 out of 4 dinarim. So of course he has to swear anyway. Never mind the reason of shema yotzi alos pekodin. Rather, Shmuel says that last statement in the Mishnah is referring back to the Resha. And when we say Resha, Maya Resha, Sefer de Resha, meaning the second case in the Mishnah out of the four. It can't be obviously the first case because in the first case there's no Shvur Daradais. So the second case was again, where the loiva is the moedim mitzvah, sela who besicha all of a shekel ha'yishava. The malva says, I lent you a sela, and this mashkin was worth only a shekel. Now that the mashkin is lost, then I owe you only then I would have owed you 1 shekel, but meanwhile you owe me a complete sela to pay off the other shekel. V'ha'lo oimer, and the loiva says, loiki not so. El sela v'isani all of a shloisha dinarim ha'yishava. He says, you lent me a sela, and it was worth 3 dinarim. Therefore, I only owe you 1 dinar out of 4. So Chayev, then we say he's Chayev to take a shvur because he's moedim mitzas. The other guy is claiming from him 2 dinarim and he's counterclaiming and saying that I owe only 1. So he's Chayev. Now, the point is, Shmuel is saying what the Mishnah means is the shvur gabi loiva. Really, ordinarily, the loiva would be the one to take the shvur because he's the moedim mitzas. But in this case, in this case, the Chachamim say it should be the Malva who swears, Shemi Yishav Zeva, Yotzi Allah Sabikadin, because if a Loiva swears that it was worth X amount, then the Malva is going to bring out the Bikadin. So again, according to Rashi, the problem is he's going to show up the Loiva as a liar. Here, how could you claim this thing was worth only 3 dinarim when now we have it in front of us and we can clearly see that it's worth a complete seller of 4 dinarim? And therefore, passel him for Eidos in the future. And according to Tosfos, the vote is, why should we have the loiva swear in the first place when it would be so easy for us to go and evaluate and see how much the thing is actually worth, and rather than having him take a shavua at all. So therefore, either according to either explanation, the point is, we're saying that the loiva should not be the one, that the loiva should not be the one to swear, rather the malva, the one who's holding on to the kodin, which is to say the mashkin, should be the one to swear. Now that we established that, now that we understand what the Mishnah means, so now the im isa lid Rav Huna. Now the question is, if what Rav Huna is saying is correct, that even that in all cases when there's a mashkin, the one who's holding the mashkin, the shomer, is going to have to swear that is going to have to swear that it's not in his possession. Well then, kivin b'shtaba malva she'ena b'rishusay. Once the malva swears that the thing is not in his possession, hefi motzi mapikla. How would he afterwards be able to bring it out? So what does the Mishnah mean that you have a concern that the loiva may swear that the loiva may swear that's worth X amount, and then the malva is going to bring it out? The malva himself is going to have to swear, according to Rav Huna, we're concerned, Shema Ein of Nosanba, that he may have decided, you know what, I'd like to keep this thing for myself, and I'll just pay the guy the value that it's worth. So in that case, once he takes that kind of shvua, then he's not bringing it out afterwards anyway, because he doesn't want to show himself as a liar. So according to Rav Huna, in the second case of the Mishnah, why wouldn't we have the loiva take the shvur? The loiva and the malva on the face of it are both going to be taking the shvurs. The malva that it's ena b'rishusay, the loiva that it was worth X amount, and then that's that. The answer is, Omar Rava, k'yesh edim shenisrafa. So Rava says the answer could be, that we're talking about Hagos Habach adds Omer of Yosef, that Rava says this in the name of Rav Yosef. Anyway, Sheyesh Edim Shenisrafa, we're talking about where there were Edim that it was burnt. So there's Edim that it was burnt, in which case, then so now he doesn't need to swift Shein Abershusa anymore, because after all, we have Edim that it was burnt. So therefore, so now there's no Shavuah for the Malvat to take, that it's Ein Abershusa, that would only be when we have reason to be concerned that he's keeping it for himself. But now, obviously, that's not the case. The Chidushim Amiyuchasim L'Ritva point out, to be exact, what you still could have, for example, what does it mean that there were Edim that it was burnt? You would have, for example, something along the lines of that they're saying that we saw that a beged that had certain simonim on it was burnt, and we would assume that that's the one, that was the mashkin, even though conceivably it might have actually been a different beged. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi Mehechi Maisala. Well, in that case, then what is the Mishnah saying in Shavuos that we said that I thought
that you were saying, well, his house got burnt. So
obviously if we say that his house got burnt, then yeah, we could say obviously that the whole the beggar was burnt in it.
When you see a beggar coming out of fire, you can't tell what a beggar looks like already. It's a different
right, story. Right. So that the Chedoshim Amiyuchasim L'Ritva explained that we may be talking about over here, for example, of the Edim. It's not that the guy's whole house burnt, but they were able to give Eders that we saw a beggar with such a simon was burnt, and we would assume that that is the one of the mashkin. But the Gemara asks, Yehochi Mehecha Maisula. Okay, well, in that case, fine. The Malveh is not swearing that it's Eina Bershuse because there's no need to. But in that case, then what do we have? The Mishnah from Shavuos was saying, Shema Yotzi Allah Sapikodin, he might bring it out and show that the Loiva is a liar according to Rashi, or there's no need for the Loiva to swear in the first case according to Tosfos. If there's Edim that it was burnt, then there's nothing to talk about anyhow. So again, here you have that point. It could have conceivably been a different Beged, but actually, the Chidushim Amiyuchasim L'Ritva explains that once we're relying on their aiders to say that we're not going to make them take the Shavuah She'ena Bershusay, then we should also rely on them that the Malveh is not going to be able to bring it out anymore. We shouldn't assume that we're referring to two different begotten. We should assume the one that they're testifying about is in fact the one from the Mashkin. So you're right. Ela Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rather, Rabbi Yosef answers. You have to say Sheyesh Edim Shenignava. So you could say that there were Edim that the thing was stolen. So now he doesn't have to swear Sheyena Bershusay, but the Pekodin still exists. So there's always the possibility that he may get it back and Yotzi Allah said Pekodin. Well, the one asked, how is he going to get it back? So if Seif Mehechim Aisala, how is he going to get it back and possibly be able to produce it in Beis Din if it was stolen? And the answer is the Torah Chumaisula. You could say when it was stolen, conceivably he might go to the Tircha of finding it. And then find who the ganav is. Find, for example, Rashi says there were only so many people who have been going into his house, Pashtos, so it has to be. He can narrow down who it was that stole it and go and figure that out and get it back from the ganav. So now you can have the case. So this brings us to a possibility as follows. Now we can explain the Mishnah in Shavuos and still make it work with what Rav Huna is saying. We do make the person take a Shavuah She'ena Bershusay in case, like we're saying, he decided to keep it for himself. When there's Edim that it was stolen, then we don't have to do that because we have Edim that it was stolen. But because there's the possibility of Torah Chomaisi Law, where he may go to the trouble of getting it back from the Ganav, therefore, you have the possibility when they come to Beis Din and the Loiva swears that it was worth X amount, three dinarim, as we had in the case of the Mishnah, and then Yotzi Allah as a Pekodin, now there's the possibility he may bring out the Pekodin and show that the other guy is a liar and show that it's actually worth four dinarim, or according to Tosfos, that now that it's available, we'd rather not have the Loiva take a Shavua at all, and therefore that would be what the Mishnah says. So it can still work with Rav Huna's din that Mashbiya knows his Shavua Shein Abershusay. Based on what we said before, that the Rambam holds, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if we're talking about something which is commonly available, then there's no Shavuah She'ena Bershusay in the first place. There's no reason to suspect that he would have taken it for himself. But Pashtos, the Gemara could have given such an answer that we're talking about, that the Mashkin is something which is very commonly available. Maybe the Gemara didn't do that because we would tend to assume that the kind of mashkin that you take at the time when you borrow money, as opposed to a mashkin that you take shaloi b'shas alvah later on after the guy is defaulting, that you'll take anything as available. But we're not talking about that kind of mashkin. We're talking about the kind that you're taking at the time of the halva, Pashtus, I guess we could say, Balabatish, that maybe you would tend to take something that's more rare and valuable, something that the guy can't live without, rather than, for example, let's say a bolt of cloth or something like that, where, yeah, he could easily just say, you know what, fine, that's Farfalla, I'm not going to return the debt. I'll let him pay himself out of that, and I'll just go buy myself another one. Anyway, so, okay. So the Gemara says, so the question is, well, then you have to ask the question, so how does it help for the malva to be swearing that how much it was worth? Why aren't we concerned the other way around? The loiva may conceivably then figure out who the ganav was and go get it back from the ganav. Once we're saying it was stolen from the malva's house, so it's not right now in his possession anyhow, and the only question is what happens after the gneva, whether it's possible to get it back. Well, why can't it conceivably be that the loiva would then go figure out who the ganav is? He's going to bring it to Beis Din. Now, in the fourth case of the Mishnah, for example, when the malva is chayav swear that the thing is worth X amount, and he's claiming, for example, in the fourth case of the Mishnah, he was claiming that the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, which is 1 sela plus 1 dinar. Meanwhile, the loiva is claiming that it was worth 2 sloim, which is 8 dinarim, and therefore the malva is moedim mirtzas. Why don't we have the problem the other way around? If the malva swears, then the loiva may produce the pekodin, and then you have problems. So the Gemara answers, that wouldn't work. The malva knows who's coming in and out of his house, but also the Torah HaMaisila. Therefore, he can narrow down who the ganav would be, and he's more likely to be able to get it back. How would the loiva know in the first place who has gone in and out of the malva's house to the extent that we should say that he might be able to find the gun? So if we're going to be concerned about that after the gneva, he may find it, it's more likely we would be more likely to assume it would be the malva who conceivably might do that. And then after the loiva swears, he's going to produce the pekodin, much more so than the other way around, where after the malva swears in the fourth case of the Mishnah, that we should say that the loiva is going to produce it, because it's very unlikely. It's much less likely, rather, that the loiva is going to have any idea who the ganav was.
The loiva really has it, and he swears, it shows he's also not.
What we're saying is in the fourth case of the Mishnah, when the loiva is saying that the mashkin was worth twice as much as what you lent. You lent me 1 sela, the mashkin was worth 2 sloim. Now that the mashkin is lost, you malva, only 1 sela. Meanwhile, the malva is counterclaiming and saying, no, I agree that the debt is gone because the mashkin was worth more than that, but the mashkin was worth 5 dinarim, not 8, as you're saying. So I only owe you 1 dinar rather than 4. That makes him more demictus. So he has to swear. So there's no way that we're going to say, that's what the Gemara is saying, there's no way that we're going to say, yeah, but if the malva swears, what happened? The loiva may then bring out the pekodin and show that he was a liar, because it's much less likely that the loiva is going to be able, if we're talking about that it was stolen, as Rabbi Yosef had explained, it's much less likely that the loiva is going to have any chance of figuring out who it was that stole it in the first place.
You can make a mistake by something worth how much.
No, so have a mistake, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, Tosfos had mentioned before, that we're not even talking about, let's say, where it went up, where it went down in value or something, because then that still doesn't work. The Gemara is saying over here, The Gemara is asking over here, if the malva swears, why can't the loiva bring it out? If it's a matter of that it might be miskalkel, even though he swore truthfully, then it comes out. If it was in fact worth, in that case, remember, the loiva is claiming that it's worth more, not that it's worth less. So then obviously we can't be talking about that the malva undervalued it, because since then it deteriorated, because if I care, the loiva is saying it's worth more and he can bring it out and show that it's so. Actually, so now, again, we said before, we have Rashi and Tosfos' explanations of what the problem is. Shema Yotzi Alaros HaPikodin, according to Rashi, that he's going to show up the other guy as a liar, according to Tosfos, that there should be no need for a Shavua in the first place. So the Rashba points out that would actually require a slightly different Gersa in the Gemara over here, when the Gemara is saying that the loiva, conceivably, isn't there the problem that the loiva might go and find the ganav and find who it is, and we're saying that no, because the loiva is going to have no, The question is that not that the loiva might do that, but why shouldn't the loiva do that? Why shouldn't we say that the loiva should have to swear at like it would normally be in the second case of the Mishnah and make him then therefore that'll require him to go look for the mashkin in order to be able to demonstrate that his shavua is true in order to not have to swear in the first place? And the answer is that the loiva is not likely to figure out who the ganav was. No, because the malva will know that. But the malva knows who goes in and out of his house. So that's one way of understanding how that Mishnah can fit with Rav Huna's opinion. So you do make the malva swear she'ena b'rishusay, but then in the second case of the Mishnah, normally the loiva would have to be the one who's swearing because he's the mode of mitzvahs. But in this case, the chachamim transfer the shvur to the malva because of this problem shema yotzi alos ha'pekadim. Because after it was stolen, the malva might have gotten it back from the ganav, and now he would take it out. And again, according to Rashi, now he's showing up the loiva to be a liar and passeling him. And according to Tosfos, that it would mean the shvur should have been unnecessary in the first place. Okay. Abaya Omar, Abaya says another answer. You could say, you don't even have to say that we're talking about that there were edim, that it was stolen. You might have that the malva is going to claim, yes, originally it was lost, and therefore we went to Beis Din and we had this whole discussion of whether it was worth 3 or 5 or 8 dinarim or whatever. But now, after you swore it, I found it. So therefore, so we can say, in other words, I truly swore that shvur sheinu b'rishusay, because as far as I knew at the time, it wasn't in my rishus. But now I found it, and therefore now I can show that you weren't telling the truth when you said how much it was worth, or that maybe your shvur was unnecessary in the first place. The Pnei Yeshua talks about, according to Tosfos, that if he just swears she'ena b'rishusay, he's not going to bother really looking very much for it. He's going to figure, look, there's no real shavuos sheker. I thought, as far as I knew, that it's not by me. But because once we're going to make the malva swear how much it's worth, he's going to be careful to look for it, because otherwise it's going to cause laws if he finds it. That people are going to say that he's a liar. So that gives him more of an incentive. The Pnei Yeshua explains, once you make the malva swear, it gives him more of an incentive because he previously had to swear shavuos sheinu b'rishusay, because that's easy enough for him to say, look, at the time, I thought I didn't have it anymore. But no, the vote is, because we make him swear the value of it, then therefore that gives him more of an incentive to look for it in order that later on, if it's found, we don't, everybody doesn't say, oh, look at that, he swore that it was worth X amount, and now we find that it was different. So Abaye says you can do it that way, and that way you don't need Aiden Bechlal, that it was stolen, and then we're saying, like Rabbi Yosef had said, and then we have to talk about that he goes and finds the gun. Rav Ashi gives another answer. Actually, when we say in the Mishnah that the loiva has to swear, and we're saying that instead we put the shavua on the malva, zen nishba v'zen nishba, it actually means both of them are going to be taking a shavua. Zen nishba she'en b'rishusay. It's true that the malva is going to be swearing, like Rav Huna said, that it's not in his rishus. V'zen nishba kama hayashava. The loiva is still going to have to be the one to swear how much it's worth. Rav Ashi is saying it doesn't mean that we're going to take that shvur away from the loiva and impose it on the malva, like we said in all the previous answers. We still are going to make that loiva take the shvur. But v'hochi kama, what the Mishnah means is min nishba tchila, who's the one who takes the shvur first out of those two shvurs? In the second case of the Mishnah, where again the malva is claiming the thing was worth a full seller. Where the malva is claiming the thing was worth only a shekel, half a seller, and therefore you owe me the other half seller, and meanwhile the loiva is claiming it was worth three dinarim, three quarters of a seller, and therefore I owe you only one dinar, one fourth of a seller, then we're saying he's going to have to swear as motive mixtas, but before he swears that shavua of motive mixtas, we're going to make the malva swear she'ena b'rishusay. And the reason is, the Mishnah, when it says min nishba, doesn't mean who swears b'chlal. It means min nishba t'chila, means out of the two shvuos that have to be taken by the two sides, who's swearing first? Malva nishba t'chila. It's going to be the malva who takes the shvuah first. Shemi shavazev yitzah alas b'kaden, because otherwise, if the loiva swears first, then the malva may bring out the b'kaden and show that he's a liar. But according to Tosfos, make it show that the shavuah was unnecessary in the first place, and therefore we make the malva swear first. And again, once he swears that it's ena b'rishusay, then he's not going to bring it out afterwards because he didn't want to show himself as a liar. So therefore, so that's so.
Why have to be
So if he claims that it was lost, well, that's what we're saying. In other words, he's claiming that that's the whole case of the Mishnah was over the Mashkin, where it was lost. So the first answer was we said that it was lost. First, we tried to say lost meaning in a fire. We said that doesn't work. Then we said lost meaning to Gneva, and conceivably you could get it back from the Gano. Then we were saying Abaya's answer is it does taka mean that it was lost, but now he found it. And now Rav Ashi is saying that he is saying that it was lost, and therefore we make him take a shavua she'ena b'rishusoy. Now at that point, it doesn't even matter if he finds it afterwards. So maybe it would still matter if he finds it afterwards. That could be a problem because then he's still going to bring it out afterwards. But at least we make him swear that it's ena b'rishusoy. Meaning, in other words, so he's going to have to swear that ena b'rishusoy, and only after he swears that, then the loiver is going to swear.
I mean,
there's only a certain extent we can do. I mean, we have to have a shavuot taking place over here because there is a mode of mitzvah. There's only so much that we can guard against Ramayim, you know. In fact, the Ritva points out, give the Malva's shavuot is only derabanan. The Ravuna's shavuot, Mashvirna's shavuot, Shani Bereshusay, is only derabanan. The Loivus shavuot is daraisa because he's in mode of mitzvah. You would think shavuot daraisa should go before shavuot derabanan, and that is why the Mishnah is telling us that no, the fact is in this case, the Malva swears first because of this consideration. Yeah. So we have several answers to find for how that Mishnah would work with Ravuna. Now, the Gemara points out, Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, Meshmeid Rav Omar, this is a later Rav Huna, not the regular Rav Huna. I don't think it ever mentions his father's name in Shas. And anyway, the regular Rav Huna was a Rebbe of Rav. This Rav Huna bar Tachlifa is a Talmud of Rav. Anyway, so he says, Reisha the Sefer Tiuvtel Rav Huna. So far, we've been discussing the second case of the Mishnah, where the Loiva is the Moed of Mikzas, and he's the one who has to swear. And then we're talking about how that interplays with the Malvas, Shavua, She'ena B'Rishusay. But actually, Rav Huna bar Tachlifa points out the third case of the Mishnah is a contradiction on Rav Huna. The third case of the Mishnah, on the face of it, there's no Shavua, because the third case was where the Loiva says that the Mashkin was worth two Sloyim, meaning that therefore, since you lent me a Sela to begin with, you owe me a whole nother Sela for the remainder of the Mashkin, and the Malva is counterclaiming that no, the Mashkin was worth only one Sela, and therefore they cancel each other out, and I don't owe you anything. So there's no Shavua, because he's a Kofer Hakel. But Rav Huna bar Tachlifa is going to point out, Reisha de Sefer Kash Tiyuv de Rav Huna. That third case in the Mishnah seems to be a contradiction on Rav Huna. The case was Sela Visani Olav Shtaim Hayashava. The Loiva is saying, you lent me a Sela with this Mashkin, but the Mashkin itself was worth two, and now that the Mashkin is lost, you owe me a whole Sela. The Malva says that no, the Mashkin was worth only a Sela, and therefore I don't owe you anything. So we said Potter, he's Potter from a Shavua. But, says Rav Huna bar Tachlifa, v'im isa l'd Rav Huna, if you're going to say that we accept Rav Huna's din, and we say that always the Malva, who is the one holding on to Pekadin, has to swear Shavur she'ena b'rishusay, well then, migur de mishtaba Malva she'ena b'rishusay, once he's already swearing that ena b'rishusay, l'shtaba nami, a gilgul shavur, kama hayashava, shouldn't we also include by gilgul shavur how much it was worth? The whole concept of Gilgul Shavua we've learned before. We learned in Kedushin. We learned from the case of the Sota, where the Sota is only being brought to the Beis Mikdash now because her husband suspects her of being unfaithful now. But meanwhile, it includes in the Shavua that she also wasn't Mizana when she was in Arusa or Shemeres Yavam, and so on and so forth. So we see from there the concept of Gilgul Shavua, and we talked about it in Masechta Kedushin. So the same thing over here. Now, Tosfos points out, the question is not really on all, the question of Rav Huna bar Tachlifa would not be on all the different explanations we said before. According to Rava and Rav Yosef's explanations that we were talking about, where there's Edom that the Mashkin was burnt or stolen, and then the only problem is that he may, in the case burnt, we said it doesn't really work out at all. In the case where it was stolen, we said he might go and get it back from the Ganev. So then so according to those, then our case over here, we're not talking about since there were Edim that it was stolen, he doesn't have to swear. Shavur Shein and Bereshusay, so there's no Gilgul Shavur to talk about. The question would only be on Abaya's and Rav Ashi's explanations, where we can be talking about the thing actually may still conceivably be in his possession. He's swearing Shavur Shein and Bereshusay, but after all, it might really be in his possession because we don't have Edim, and that's why we make him take the Shavur Shein and Bereshusay. Then why don't we have have Gilgal Shvuah, we'll also have him swear how much it was worth. So Vim Isa Ludabhuna, Nigga de Mishtaba Malva Shaina Bushose. Once the Malva is swearing that it's not Birushose, Lishtaba Namiya Gilgal Shvuah Kamahayashava. Then with Gilgal Shvuah, let him also swear how much it was worth. So why is the third case of the Mishnah saying that he's potter from swearing altogether? According to Rav Huna, he should actually be chayav to swear to the value of it once he's already swearing that it's not in his rishus. So Rav Ashi says, generations later, I told this discussion over to my Rebbe, Rav Kahana. And he says, Teheib Ma'amina. We're going to have to explain that the Mishnah is talking about that the Loiva believes the Malva when he says She'ena Birshosai. So in other words, up until now, we've been saying whether the Malva is saying it's not in my Rishos, it was Obad, and the Loiva says, I don't believe you, you're going to have to swear She'ena Birshosai. Now we're talking about that. To begin with, the Loiva, when the Malva says, I lost it, then the Loiva believes him, and therefore there's no Shvuah, She'ena Birshosai. Well, if there's no Shvuah, She'ena Birshosai, then there's also no Shvuah how much it's worth. Because there's no Gilgal Shvuah, there's no original Shvuah to be Megalgal on how much it's worth, and that's why the Mishnah would be saying that he's potter from swearing. Tosfos points out, now why didn't the Gemara try using this answer? Why didn't the Gemara try using this answer earlier? So the answer is, Tosfos says, because over there, when we were talking about in the earlier case involving where the loiva would have to swear, if ma'minoi, then there's not going to be a Shvuah at all. Here, to begin with, there's really no Shvuah. So he could have been Megalgal Shvuah, but that he's not considered. He's willing to trust him to that extent to say, I'm not going to do Gilgal Shvuah. But to prevent that there shouldn't be a Shvuah in the first place, that you shouldn't have to at all swear of, that you shouldn't at all have to swear of, that ain't a Birshusay, then we're not going to do that. Then the Malva is not going to swear that in a Birshusay, and therefore that's going to prevent also the Loiva from swearing how much it was worth. That is how Tosfos explains it. But here we're talking about where it would be the Malva who would have to swear, and so far he doesn't have to because he's a Koyfer Hakol. We can say that the Loiva believes him when he says it's not in his Rishus, therefore there's no Shvuah on that. So the Gemara says, the Nehemne Loiva la Malva Nami Baha Kama Hayashava. Well, in that case, then why is there even a claim in Beis Din where the Loiva is saying it was worth X amount, it was worth 2 Sloyim, and the Malva is counterclaiming if he's trusting the Malva that it's not in his Rishus, he should also trust him when he says how much it's worth. And the answer is, like Kim Levigave, you can say the Malva may not know how much the Mashkin is worth. It doesn't belong to him after all. It's only by him temporarily. So he never went to the trouble of figuring out how much it's actually worth. So you could say the Loiva would believe him, but the Loiva would say to the Malva, look, you know, this thing has only been by you for a short time. You don't really know how much it's worth. I'm telling you how much it's worth. Okay, the Gemara asks for Nehemne Malva the Loiva de Kimle Begave. Well, then in that case, if we're talking about where there's a certain amount of trust between one another, and we're saying that the Loiva is willing to believe the Malva when he says it's not in his possession anymore, then why shouldn't we say, by the same token, the Malva will reciprocate and trust the Loiva how much it's worth? And then there's no claim in Ben, there's no claim and counterclaim in Basin in the first place. And the answer is Loiva Haman. Like, we can assume that the Malva does not trust the Loiva so much. Now, why is that? What's the logic that we should say that this trust goes only in one direction? The Loiva trusts the Malva when he says it's not Birshusai and that he didn't keep it for himself, but the Malva is not trusting the Loiva how much it's worth, and therefore the Loiva is saying it's worth 2 Sloyim and the Malva is saying back it's worth only 1 Sela. And the answer is Loiva Makayim Be Malva Tumas Yishorim Tanfen. The Loiva will think to himself that he can apply to himself the posik that says about the Malva, Tumas Yeshorim, the perfection of the Tzmimus of the Yeshorim, of the straight people, Tanchem will lead them in the right direction. Meaning, in other words, the Loiva is going to think to himself, if this guy was not a Neman V'Yosher, then Hashem wouldn't have made him rich. Now, obviously, it doesn't always work 100% of the time. We know there are rich Rishoyim out there, but ordinarily, we can assume that, especially this guy is not a Rosh after all, he's willing to lend out money. So we can assume, therefore, that he has a certain Yashtus, a certain Tmimus to him that made it, that Hashem decided to entrust him with wealth, and therefore that I can trust him when he says, Ein B'Shosei. On the other hand, the Malva is going to apply to the Loiva the second half of the same pasuk that says the crookedness of the burgdom of the disloyal ones, Yeshadim is going to throw them down. In other words, here this loiva is poor and gotten down to the point where he has to borrow money. That itself shows that maybe he's not such a trustworthy person, and therefore the Abish didn't want to entrust him with money. Therefore, he's going to say that I can't necessarily believe you when you say the mashkin was worth X amount. And therefore, I'm counterclaiming that it was worth a different amount. And then we're going to have the cases in the Mishnah when he's potter because Koifer Hakel versus when he's Chayav Shvur because Motiv Mitzvahs. Okay. So the point is, in other words, that so the bottom line is Rav Huna's din does stand. We do say we make him take a Shvur, Shaina Bershosai. However, we, and then we worked out various possible ways of how that interplays with the Mishnah and Shavuos with the four cases involving the Loiva and the Malva. Okay. But it is true, in other words, to go with this last point of Rav Huna bar Tachlifas, it's true. If we're going to make the Malva swear, if you have a case where the Loiva doesn't trust him, that Eina Bershosai, and we're going to make the Malva swear, then it's true in that case he would also be swearing by Gilgul Shavua how much it's worth. Okay. The Gemara tells a case which is going to relate back to our Mishnah. There was a person who deposited kefi for safekeeping by somebody else. Rashi translates kefi as nizamim, which means wings, or specifically a nezim sometimes means nose wings. Rabbi Nachmanel says that, actually Rashi himself explains elsewhere that kefi means magolius, means jewel. Whatever the case, he deposited these rings or jewels by somebody else for safety. Omale havli kefi. Eventually, the guy comes back and says, "Give me back my kefi because I'm back in town. I want him back." Omale lo yadina hecha isvinu. And the shomer says, "I don't remember where I put it." Also, the kamei Rav Nachman. So the case came to Rav Nachman. Omale Rav Nachman says, "Kol lo yadina p'usihi." Whenever you say lo yadina, I don't know where it is, then that's p'shia. Zil Shalim, go pay him. So you were Peshea, and a Shomer who's Peshea is always Chayev, therefore you're Chayev to pay. Actually, the Nesivus talks about it may not be a matter of Peshea, it may be more a matter of Mazik. And the Nesivus on Shulchan Aruch discusses the Naftamina between those. So no matter what, you have to remember where they were. Actually, the Meiri has an interesting take on it. The Meiri says that it would have to be that he says, I don't remember whether I put them in a safe place. If he says, I remember I put them in a safe place, I just don't remember where that is right now, that would not be, the Meiri says, that would not be the din of our Gemara over here, because then we would say, at least he knows he put it in a safe place. But the other Rishonim disagree. The Ritva says that no, even if he remembers that he put it in a safe place, he has to remember the actual place so he can give it back. Anyway, so Rav Nachman tells him, Zil Shalim, go pay. The guy did not want to pay. Also, Rav Nachman, Agbela Padnemine. So Rav Nachman went and had Basin take away his mansion to pay off the debt. Kifi are worth $1 million. So Rav Nachman took his mansion, which was worth $1 million, to give it to the other guy to pay off the debt. Eventually, they found the kefi, these rings or jewels of the case maybe, the iyakur, and meanwhile, the value of them had gone up. So now the question is, at the time when he claimed that they didn't know where they were worth $1 million. Now they're worth 1.2 million. Who gets the extra 0.2? Who gets the extra 200,000? Do we say that the Shomer has paid for them? So now we say then when they appreciated in value was in his possession, or do we say that not? Amar of Nachman, Hadri Kefi the Marayu, Bahadra Apadna Lamara. So Nachman says everything goes back to square one. Give the Kefi back to their owner. And yes, including the extra value, the Shomer is not entitled to the extra value from them, and give back the mansion to the Shomer, and he continues to live in it. So Omar Rava, says, Have you seen a Kamed Rav Nachman? I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman as a Talmud when this case came up. Upirkin Hamaskid Hava. We were learning at that time Perak Hamaskid or Perak of Gemara. You see from this, by the way, that the Prokim, that the names of the, at least in this example, we see that the names of the Prokim then were already the same as they are now. Generally, most Prokim are named after their first word. So yeah. Anyway. So I, Rava, asked Rav Nachman, what do you mean? In our Mishnah, we have the case, Shilin v'lo rotza b'shava. You have the case where he paid and didn't want to swear, and then we said he's entitled to the kefal or the tashlum ha'abav ha'misha. So in our case over here, the equivalent of the kefal for our purposes is the extra value that now these rings are worth, where before they were worth $1 million, and now they're 1.2 million. So why shouldn't he be entitled to that extra amount, since after all, he did pay? So that extra amount should be considered. Now, it's true, we did learn before, Tosfos points out, we did learn yesterday that there's a difference between shvach de migufa and shvach de asim alma. We said there's a difference between shvach that comes from the animal itself, for example, the wool or the babies, versus a shvach that comes from someplace else, for example, the tashlum kefal from a ganev. So, okay, necessarily we have to say over here that the Rava is considering that this should be considered a shvach de alma. And therefore, we should say that the owner of the rings was machna to him that potential kefal because he paid. and the Gemara says Rava says v'loya hadurli. So Rav Nachman did not answer him. He didn't even bother answering him. And now, when Rava tells the story over later on, he says v'shaper avad v'loya hadurli. Actually, Rav Nachman was correct in not answering me. I didn't realize there's a big difference between our case involving these rings and the mansion versus the case of our Mishnah. My timer, possibly after Chayla Beit Dina, because in the case of our Mishnah, he wasn't Matriach, the guy to come to Beis Din to get him to pay. He said on his own, I'll be Mashalim. Okay, maybe he said, maybe he didn't actually do it yet, whatever, but at least he wasn't Matriach him to Beis Din to see to it that he pays. Whereas over here, is Matriachim to come to Beis Din and to force that Beis Din, that Rav Nachman has to go and go through the whole process to take away his mansion. So then at that point, we're not going to say that, he's machna to him anything. So in that case, it is really very different. Rabbi Akiva Eger actually points out that he could have said, for example, we said before that the point is he could have made a different claim. He could have claimed, for example, that something happened to it for which I could swear and be potter. Over here, when we're saying pshia or mazik or whatever, what kind of claim? He could say that after I didn't know where it was, but then I found it, and then there was an oinus. So therefore, he'd be able to get away, he'd be able to make a claim that would potter him from paying, and therefore Rava thought that it should be similar to our Mishnah. But again, the answer is here, he was matriachim to base it. Tosfos points out, if you even have the case that we learned in Bava Kamma, where you have a case where he did say, where he did swear in Beis Din, but then afterwards he said, you know what, after all, I'll pay, even though I'm potter as a result of my shur, fine, maybe he was matriachim to Beis Din, but at least eventually he paid willingly. Here he didn't even pay willingly. So therefore, so you can't say that the other guy is machna him anything, so therefore that extra value goes to the owner, not to the shur. So it's not like the case of our Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara asks now, we're saying that Rav Nachman had said you give back the mansion to the original owner. Why? Lememra the sover of Nachman de Shuma Hoder. Does that mean that Rav Nachman holds that when Beis Din has to evaluate the value of a property, a field or a mansion in this case or whatever, and take it away from one guy to pay the other, that Rav Nachman holds we can always undo that? And we're gonna say, why don't we say, in other words, why can't the one who now has the mansion, the one who used to have the kepi, why can't he say, you know what, actually, I like this mansion, I've gotten comfortable living in it, why should I be required to return? And the answer is, shiny hossam, it's different in that case, the shuma b'tos haba, because here to begin with, the whole shuma was based on a mistaken assumption. The kefi were there all along, so therefore there was no, if we had known that they had been there, then we wouldn't have been taking away his mansion in the first place. So in other words, there's a case, for example, where the guy truly doesn't have what to pay with and he owes money, then we can say that a shuma would actually be considered like a sale. And once it's finished, then it's finished. And we don't have the right to tell. We don't have the right to tell the one who now has it, the malva, let's say, that you have to vacate it and return it to the original owner. Not necessarily. But in this particular case where the whole thing was based on a toast, then we would say that. In fact, the Rashba rather discusses that conceivably you could have cases where the Shomer, for example, if he doesn't want to return the kefi, he is going to have to pay that extra value, the 200,000. Let's say that it went up, he's going to have to pay it to the other guy, and then fine, he can keep the kefi, and the other guy can keep the mansion. If the Shomer wants to do that, the Rashba learns he'd be able to do that. Definitely. because at this point we would say he's already paid for the base value of the keifer by giving away his mansion, which was worth $1 million. Now the keifer are worth more. He may well say, you know what, at this point where the keifer are worth more, fine, I'm willing to pay the extra amount, and then and you can keep the mansion at this point and I'll keep the keifer. And yeah. So the Gemara says, now that we're talking about this matter of Shuma and we're discussing whether Shuma Hadar, let's digress a little bit to talking about that. A Shuma, which is, Shuma means evaluation. So it means when Beis Din evaluates, when Beis Din says, Reuven owes Shimon X amount and he can't pay, we need to evaluate and find some property of Shimon's that's worth enough to be able to pay off the debt. We talk about these dinim more extensively in the first parak. So now what's the din later on if the guy has money to pay back? So the Gemara says, Amri Nahadori, the Chachamim of Nahadori said, Shuma Hadar Ad Shreisa Yarche Shata. A Shuma can be, we can make him return it up to 12 months. So in other words, in a case like this, so in the case of the mansion over here, we're saying that no, because the whole thing was based on toast. But in a regular case, let's say where Reuven borrowed X amount from Shimon, can't pay off, and therefore Beis Din gives eventually, after going through the whole process, Beis Din gives Shimon the right to take a certain property of Reuven and keep it, and then take it over and use it to pay the debt. Well, then, how dare you say, up to 12 months, we can make Shimon, if Reuven raises the money to buy it back, then we can make Shimon return it. After that, Shimon has the right to say, you know what, I like this field and I'd like to keep it, and you can take your money and buy another field or another mansion or whatever. On the other hand, Amemer says, don't say that all Nahadori hold this way. I'm also from Nahadori. Or Svidali, Shuma Hodel Olam, I hold a Shuma can always be undone. The halacha is, in fact, Shuma Hodel Olam, it does, Mishum Shanem of Asisa Yoshevat Tov. But the pasuk says you should do what's straight and what's good, meaning, in other words, it's Yoshevat Tov, that the original owner should be able to get it back whenever he's able to buy it back. So in other words, so even if it's much more than 12 months, still he can say anytime he raises the money, then he can say that that I want it back. So the Gemara continues with dinim in this regard. Pshita. Now it's obvious that if Shomu lay the Baal Chayv, this pshita is an introduction to several other questions. It's obvious that if we made a shuma and we gave the property to the Baal Chayv, but also Ihu was Shomel Baal Chayv Yidei, and now in turn, let's say the same thing happened with him and another person. So Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon and defaulted on the loan, and therefore we took property from Reuven and gave it to Shimon. And now Shimon does the same thing with Levi. Shimon owes money to Levi, and he had defaulted, and therefore we end up taking this property from Shimon and giving it to Levi. So now what happens if Reuven raises enough money to be able to pay off the original debt? Amrin and Levi, we tell Levi, Loy Odifat Begavra to Osasmine, you're not in any stronger position than the person you bought it from. Shimon would have had to return it indefinitely because of Osisai Yoshevat Tov, so do you. So Reuven will pay you the amount and you're required to return him the fee. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, here's another Poshita thing. Zabna, if Shimon sold the field to somebody else, Urta, or if he bequeathed it as a Yerusha to somebody else, be a Havab Vatana, or if he gave it as a gift to somebody else, Vade Hani Meikra, died to the Aranochus, we can be sure in all those cases the person went into the property having in mind specifically the property rather than receiving the money. The Baal Chayv, you can say, Vasisa Yoshevatov, you can say, look, you know, he owed you X amount in money. Fine, he has that amount in money. But here, when he sold it to somebody else, the other guy obviously doesn't want money. Otherwise, he would have kept his money. He davka wants a field. So therefore, we can't say Valsisa Yoshevat Tov. We can't say it would be a Yoshevat Tov for him to return the field. But on the other hand, Yoshevat Tov is the other way around also. He wanted davka a field. So therefore, we can't take it away from him. So in those cases, it's obvious that in those cases they went to take over the property and they dafka wanted the property. They didn't go having in mind money because they weren't in it for money in the first place. Tosfos points out we have a concept the Gemara mentions elsewhere. Mam mocha rishon lasheni kol schus shetov liyadei. We often say that when one person sells to another, he sells along with it all schus that he had. Well, if Shimon himself has to give it back because vasisa yoshevat tov, why doesn't that transfer to Levi? And the answer is because it's only based on vasisa yoshevat tov. The fact is, it is a complete sale. He's even able, we don't say we deduct any amount that he ate for Paytas in between from the debt. No, we say it was a full-fledged sale because he owed him $1,000 and a field was taken that's worth $1,000. So, and the fact that he eats Paytas afterwards, it's full-fledged his, only because of Asisa Yashvatoi. So that's not the kind of thing we're going to transfer from one person to another. Next, the Gemara says, here's another din that we can say is clear. Shomu lo isha, if they made a shuma for a woman, so a woman was owed money and they gave her a property, the insiva, later on she got married. And this property did not become nichset son barzel, this property remained nichset malug. Oy shomu mino de isha, or the other way around, where a woman was required to pay a debt that she owed, and instead of paying the debt, they took away land from her in payment for the debt, the insiva, and she got married. Umesa, and then she died. So the question is, what's the husband's role over here? Bal b'nichse ishta lekeachavi. A husband, when it comes to his wife's nechosim, when it comes to a nichse malug, is considered like a lekeach, is considered like a buyer. Loy mehadav loy mehadrin lei. So therefore, just like we said before, that if Shimon sells the property to Levi, then we said that we can't force Levi to give it back to Reuven. The same way over here, when the husband takes over from his wife after she passes away, we say the same thing that we don't make him give back any field that she received as a shuma, and he doesn't have the right to get back any field that was taken from her as a shuma. The case where we're talking about over here, where she passed away, Rashi, now the Gemara mentions the Umesa only on the second case. Does it apply to both cases as well? There's discussion among the poskim about that, whether it means that Umesa applies to both cases. In the first case, maybe we don't need to say Umesa, the husband already, because of Nichsa Malug, then the husband is already maybe considered a Lekeach even while he's alive. And the reason is the Omer of Yosef Bar Chanina, but Usha Hiskinu, when the Sanhedrin was in Usha a few decades after the Churban, they made a takana, when a woman sells some of her nichsim alug while her husband is alive, the husband is able to take away that property from the Kuchas, meaning because he himself is considered a Lekeach Rishon. He has first rights over it ahead of anybody else. So she sold the nichsim alug, but the husband can say, I'm the one, in effect, who bought that nichsim alug first, and therefore I have more rights over it than you do. So we see, in other words, that the husband is considered like a lekeach, and therefore that would apply to our din over here. Again, we're saying that a lekeach does not have to return a shulah. Tosfos actually points out, to a certain extent, a husband is considered like a yodish as well, but that's not really so significant over here. We said the din applies to Yerusha as well. Here's another case, though. The Gemara says that Agbe Ihu Bechoyve. Before, again, still talking about the Shuma. What happens if Shimon himself voluntarily gave it to Levi in payment of his debt? So before we were talking about where Levi had to take Shimon to Beis Din, and Beis Din ended up doing a Shuma and taking away the property from Shimon and giving it to Levi. How about, we're saying over here, Shimon owes money to Levi. He knows he doesn't have what to pay back. So he voluntarily goes over to Levi and says, you know what? I owe you X amount. I don't have what to pay. Take this property in payment. Now the question would be, when Reuven, eventually the original Loiva, has enough money to pay back, can he go to Levi and require him to return it on the grounds of Asisa Yashvatoi? Here we have Pligibar of Acha and Ravina. Here we have Rav Acha and Ravina arguing on that. One says, yes, he has to return it, and the other one says, no. Manda amaloi hodra, the opinion that says that he doesn't have to return it, sovar, he figures, hai zvini mal yehi, this is considered a full-fledged sale, and we just said before that a sale, Levi doesn't have to return. Because after all, he did it voluntarily, it wasn't taken away by Beis Din, so we can't call it a shuman. The one who says you do have to return it, Sava, he figures, Lois Vini Malyahu, it's not really a regular sale. The reason why he gave it to him on his own, rather than going to Beis Din, it's only because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to have to go through the whole rigmarole of Beis Din and be embarrassed in public. But it doesn't mean that it would be a regular sale. The Gemara mentions in various places that in most places where Rav Acha and Ravina argue, I think the rule is usually Ravina is the one who's Mekel and the Halacha is like him, except for a couple of places where Rav Acha is the one who's Mekel and the Halacha is like him. Here the Halacha is that we're Mekel and the Halacha is Mekel in favor of the buyer, that is, and we say Itaka doesn't have to return it. Okay. The Gemara says, Ume'emas ocho peri. Now, in this case of a Shumah, we're saying that he is entitled to, he has the Shumah, but nevertheless, we're saying that he may have to return it. If the guy raises money, at what point can he start eating Peris from this Karka? At what point do we consider that he owns the Karka to the extent where he can eat Peris? Rabba Omer Mikimata Adracht, Mikimati Adracht al Yode. So Rabba says, once he has the Adracht, part of the process of collecting, of giving a field, a real estate, or whatever, in payment of a debt, is that at some point during the process, we lived in Bava Kamma, 90 days, generally, we'll write an adrachta, which is a shtar that gives the malva the right to go look for a particular property that belongs to the loiva, or that the loiva had sold, and it's nechosim v'shabodim, and collect from that. And then once he finds such a property, then they write him out a shtar tirpa, and things go from there. So Rabbi is saying, once the shtar adrachta is written, then already he's entitled to have payers. The Ritva points out that, what do you mean? An Adrachte, he doesn't have a particular field that he found yet. How can he start eating Peris? He doesn't know which particular field he's going to get. So the Ritva says that over here, the Adrachte actually means once he knows what property it is, then we give him a later document that says that property now belongs definitively to him. That would be what Rabba means over here by Shtar Adrachte. Rabbi Nachanan explains like that it means that we go through the process. We write a first adrachta. We go through the whole process of doing an auction to see who's willing to pay the most for the field. Then eventually, after all of that, we figure out the actual value based on the auction and we give it to the malva. So now at that point, we write a shtar that says that he's entitled to that. That shtar is also called an adrachta, and that's what Rabbi means. Once that shtar is written, that says proof of ownership, basically, yeah. Abaya says once the Edom sign the Shtar Adrachta, even before the Malva has received the Shtar yet, then already he's entitled to the payers. Rava Omer Miklish Mikishlimu Yameach Razda, and Rava says, you have a time in between. You have a time when they're doing that auction. You have a period when they're auctioning off the field to see who's willing to pay the most for it. So even though he already has an adrachta, but now we have to go through the whole process of an auction. So once the auction days are finished, the Gemara explains in Erchin, it would be either 30 days consecutively, or if you're doing it only on Mondays and Thursdays, that would be spread out over a period of 60 days. It's double, but it comes out there's fewer days when you're announcing, because if you're doing it every day for 30 days, then it's 30 days. If you do it only on Mondays and Thursdays doing 60 days, it comes out only 18 days. But either one works, the Gemara says in Erechin. So once that's done, then Rava says now already he's entitled to start having payers from the property. Okay. The Mishnah says, so now let's get back to dinim of shomrim. This was all a digression to talk about the dinim of shumah, because we talked about it in connection with Amish. So the Mishnah says, a person rents a cow from somebody else to plow with it or whatever. And he went and lent it out to somebody else to use it during part of the time that he rented it. Now, he's not necessarily allowed to do that because he's not allowed to. So here we could be talking about, for example, he did it with the permission of the original owner. Umesa Kadauka, during that time it died. Now a shoyl is chayev for mesa, because a shoyl is potter is chayev even for unsin. A shoyl is potter only for mesa machnas malacha. Here it's not mesa machnas malacha, here it's mesa kadauka. It died while it wasn't doing the work, stand while it was sitting in the barn or something. So the shoyl is going to be chayev for that. The soicher, meanwhile, soicher being like a shoyma socher in that regard, is potter for an onus like that. So therefore,
the socher is the last guy, second guy.
So you have like this, the cow belongs to Reuben. Shimon rented it from Reuben. Now, during the time of the rental, Shimon lent it to Levi. So Levi is now a shoyl. Now it died. So now Levi is chayev, but Shimon is potter. Because Shimon being a soicher, is potter.
Because he paid rent for it.
Yeah, he's potter for oynas.
Why the third guy?
Because he's a shoyl. Shoyl is chayv even for instance.
Oh, he didn't pay rent for it.
Right. So Yeshava Socher Shemesa Kadarka. So the Socher the socha, which is Shimon, is going to have to swear, because anytime a shomer wants to claim that he's potter, he has to swear that that things actually happen as he's claiming. So he swears that Mesa Kadarka, Vashoyu, Yishalom Lasoicha, and the Shoyu, then Levi is going to pay the value of the cow to Shimon. In other words, we're not going to say that the original, according to the Tanakhama, we're not going to say it goes back to Reuben, because it was Reuben's cow to begin with. We're going to say once Shimon swore that he's potter, and once Shimon swore, and therefore he's potter, in effect, we consider as though the cow belongs to him. So now, who's Levi paying? He's paying him. So Shimon, in effect, becomes the owner. Amar Rav Yosi, but Rav Yosi disagrees. It's a case of Allah, it's a skoda before Rasa Shachaveri. How do you have Shimon doing business with Reuven's cow? The cow, after all, belongs to Reuven. How are we saying that we're gonna say that the cow now belongs to Shimon as a result of his shvur? Elataxa part of the bailim, rather the value of the cow goes back to the original owner, meaning in other words that exactly that. So Levi pays Reuven, not Shimon. Tosfos discusses why that should be so. It's not really because Reuven can say, after all, it's my cow. It's more Tosfos points out because he holds the socher is only how is the socher being koina this animal only with the shvur, and as the Gemara is going to point out, why don't we the Reuven, the original owner, can say, you know what, never mind you and your shvur, I'm going to go and take Levi directly to Beis Din and make him pay for my cow, and I don't care about the fact that you took a shvur and that you're potter. That doesn't help me at all. So therefore that would be a reason why Rabbi Yossi. So the Tanakhama is saying that yeah, he's koina with the shvur, and Reuven doesn't have the ability to say otherwise, but Rabbi Yossi is saying that he does, and therefore that Shimon is out of the picture, and Reuven just takes Levi directly to Beis Din, and Levi pays him. So that's the Gemara starts off. Omalei Rabbi Idiba Oven La'abaya Mechti. Let's consider according to the Chachamim, Socha b'may koni lahay parah. How is the Socha requiring this parah in the first place? B'shvur, evidently through his shvur, when he swore that it died normally. Then at that point, we're saying now that he's potter from paying. In effect, he became the owner of the cow.
He didn't see it die normally.
Let's say, for example, Shimon happened to be there at the time, or whatever. Let's say we have Adim. Yeah, I don't know. Adim, actually, there wouldn't be a Shavuot, but whatever. Yeah. The name of the master, the Socher. Look, why can't Reuven tell Shimon, the Socher, Dal Ant the Dal Shavuot, let's take you and your Shavuot out of the picture. I'll just take the Shoyal directly to Beis Din. In other words, you're able to swear because you're a socher. Fine, that doesn't help me at all. So shvur is not going to get me back my cow. So you stay out of the picture. I'll take Levi to Beis Din, and I'll get the amount from him. Why should we say, according to the Tanakhama, that Shimon is entitled to that payment? Omale, so Rabbi answers, Mi sabrat socher b'shvur de kaponila. You think that the socher is acquiring the animal only when he swears? No, mishas miso de koni. Actually, as soon as the animal dies, then already he's koneh. So therefore, at that point, he would be chayev to. At that point, he would be entitled to collect the value of it from Levi.
Why the skin and these things that should go to?
In other words, because he's potter from paying. Because it's once it dies, he's potter. Because the socher is potter for death. So therefore, at that point, it's considered as though as soon as the thing dies, then it's considered in his rishus because he's potter from paying for anything of it. So therefore, it's considered as though it came into his possession.
But you don't give the skin to the original owner.
You could if you want, but you're not required to. Yeah. That's what we're saying. Or shvur could be the hofis died to shabalabais. The shvur is only there in order to make the balabais feel better that he should trust the shomer, that he should trust the socher that this actually happened, and that he shouldn't say you were pesheya in it. So therefore, because after all, if it was Peshea, he would be Chayev. So therefore, Reuven, according to the Chachamim, cannot say Dal Ant for Dal Shavuosich, because the fact is that even without my Shavuah, technically I already own this animal as a result of it dying. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Abzera, Omim, there can be times, according to the Tanakhama, Shabbaila Meshaman, Tama Poros L'Socher, there could actually be cases where the owner ends up paying the socher multiple animals, according to the Chachamim. The Ritva points out, even according to Rabbi Yossi, if he gave him permission to lend it out, then this din might also apply. He would be said in the Mishnah that we have to be talking about where he asked permission to do it, but maybe not. Actually, according to the Ritva, the vote would be the case of the Mishnah is where he didn't give him permission to. So therefore, so, 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 therefore, so, 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 therefore, so, So, therefore, we have the case. Therefore, we have the machlokas of our Mishnah, whether the shomer acquires it or not, and therefore whether he's paid or whether the original owner is paid. What we can be talking about, Reb Yossi, who says, how can you do schoda before us or shochaveira, would be where he didn't have permission. If he had permission to lend it out, then even the Ritva explains that even Reb Yossi would agree with the following scenario that Reb Zeira says. Heichidami. Suppose that Shimon rented the cow from Reuven for 100 days. Then Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, you know what, actually, I need this cow. Do me a favor, lend it to me for 90 out of the 100 days that you rented it. Later on, I guess we'll figure out, we'll adjust the amounts or whatever. Meanwhile, it's going to come out, therefore, that the original owner is using it as a shoil for 90 days. You have to remember the soicher, when he paid for 100 days or when they made the agreement that he's going to, then in effect, he becomes the owner of the animal. That's why we said when it dies, it's considered his. So now when the original owner borrows it from him, then the original owner is like a shoil to the soicher.
Giving it to him on the cheshbon, I'll take off the money.
If we're going to say that he's going to take off the money, maybe. But let's say he's saying, do me a favor and lend it to me for 90 of the days. Then Shimon, we rented it from him for 80 days out of the 90. And now the owner asks to borrow it for 70 of those days. And it died during the time of the she'el. So we're talking again. So it's back and forth and back and forth. Right. Reuben has a cow. Shimon rented it from him for 100 days. Now Reuven comes to Shimon and says, you know what, do me a favor and lend it to me for 90 of those days. And Shimon does that. Let's say we're saying he's not going to deduct anything from the rental. Let's say, fine, you're my good friend. Fine, I'm willing to lend it to you. I don't need it for the entire 100 days necessarily. Then during that 90 days, then Shimon comes to Reuven and says, you know what, actually, I do need it after all. Rent it to me for 80 days. So now it's back as rented. But now Reuven goes and borrows it from him for 70 days out of the 80. Tosfos discusses, by the way, what would happen if, like this, we're going down a few days each time. What if instead, for example, to begin with, he rented it for 100, and then the original owner said, lend it to me for the whole 100. Don't use it, in other words, for the entire 100 days, I'd like it back. So then, would we necessarily say the same dinim over here? Actually, Tosfos talks about the 90 days. If Reuven were to say, lend it to me for 90 days, and then Reuven goes, and then Shimon rather goes and re-rents it for the entire 90, then we would say, in other words, that completely undoes the she'ela. So therefore, that's Tosfos says, that's a possibility. That's why we have to be talking about each time it's fewer days. So now when we have fewer and fewer days, the point is, so therefore, in effect, we have two separate schiras and two separate she'elas. So therefore, in effect, says Reb Zeira, each time that the owner borrowed it, he's now a shoyl and he's going to be responsible to pay one cow. So therefore, now if it dies during the 70 days, he's going to be chai of two cows because twice he borrowed a cow and it died, and it died kedarka, which a shoyl is chai of four. Therefore, he's going to end up having to pay for each one. But Omalei Rav Achami Difti the Ravina, but Rav Achami Difti asked Ravina, why? Mechti Choda Pori, consider, after all, it is one cow. Isle of Apka, it's going in and out. Apka Mischiris of Isle of the She'ela, Apka Mischiela of Isle of the Schiris. It's going back and forth from a state of Schiris to She'ela and from She'ela to Schiris. Why should we say that it's considered a separate animal each time, to the extent we should have to pay a separate animal for each one? So Omale, so Ravina answers, Me Isala Pora Ba'ena the name of Lahochi. If the cow actually still was alive, then sure, we could say that. But look, then he'd be potter altogether. But now he has to give it to him to do 20 days of work, because he would be potter. In other words, if it was still alive, he would just tell him, okay, you have 20 days that you're able to use it now. Now that it's dead, it's not a matter of that you owe me X amount of work from the animal. Now it's a matter of you're a shoyl, and the fact is you were a shoyl twice, and you borrowed a cow twice, and therefore you should be chayev. Therefore you should be chayev twice. So Reb Zeira defends his statement and says, so not Reb Zeira. This is Reb Achami Difti is pointing out the question. So Ravina is explaining to defend Reb Zeira that it's different now where the animal is dead, and in fact you're talking about a matter of tashlumen. Yes, there is going to be a separate tashlumen for each time of she'ela. On the other hand, Ma'abravashi disagrees with Ravina and agrees with Rav Yumi, and agrees with Rav Achami Difti's point. and says Emoy Alein al Shtei Paris. Actually, the Socher Shimon is only going to be entitled to two cows, not four. We are going to say that the Sheila and the Schiros are considered separate things, but we're going to say that we're going to say there's only going to be two of them. So the because Shum Sheila Achasi v'Shum Schiros Achasi, the name, the concept of Sheila is all the same. The 90 days of Sheila and the 70 days, they're both Sheila, and the same thing, the 100 and the 80 days are both Schiros. Therefore, all he owes is the Sheila. So the Balabas, the Ruven who owns the animal, is going to have to pay him one for the Sheila, because he was a Shoyl and he's Chayev for, and he's Chayev even for Unsin. So he's going to give him one cow, which Shimon is going to keep outright in payment of the Sheila. And as far as the Schirus, as far as the one for the Schirus, he's going to use it to work the amount of time that was left of the Schirus, the 20 days, and then he returns it to the owner like any kind of Schirus. So Rav Ashi is saying, not like Rav Zera, where the owner would have to give him two cows outright and then rent him out a cow to cover all those days. No, he's saying he only has to give him one outright to cover the Sheila and then one to recover the remainder of the Schirus. Most of the Schirus, he doesn't have to, because most of the Schirus, he was willing to lend it out. But the remainder part of the Schirus, that was cut, the original 10 days that we went from 100 down to 90, and again from 80 to 70, those, he's going to have to give him an animal to do those two brackets of 10 days of work each. He's going to have to rent him an animal for that purpose. And that's the halacha. Well, the halacha in the end, again, most of this discussion is primarily according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yossi, and the Gemara is going to end up explaining the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, then you don't really have all of this in the first place. Again, unless, as the Ritva point out, if the owner to begin with gave him permission to do all of this, then fine. So in this case, I guess, yeah, the owner himself is the one who's borrowing it, implicitly is giving permission. So then, yes, this din might work out according to the Chachamim as well.
Hard to understand.